The Flintstones, the Flintstones, that wacky Stone Age family. They live in love and laugh at life, just like you and me. There's Fred and Wilma, Pebbles too. Just to name a few. Barney, Betty, and Bam Bam too. Bringing a lot of laughs to you.
Welcome everybody to Source Material. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and tonight we slide into our second episode of our three-part series on DC's The Flintstones. Mark Radulich, the patriarch of the Radulichian Broadcasting Network, and Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy podcast, join me as we cover issues 1 and 2 of this series, conversing on subjects such as the position of a worker in society, the tragic role of a person who fights for our country, and society's unquenchable thirst for more crap. Yeah, folks, those are some heavy topics, and it's coming from the Flintstones. Don't forget to also give that Radulichian Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. You can find us at your convenience on blogtalkradio.com, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or iTunes. Just search Radulich to subscribe to the network that Source Material is a part of. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can do so by finding me at Stiznarkey. Also, the show's Twitter is at SourceMatCast. Also, Source Material does have their own Facebook page now, so feel free to give that a like as well. Now, without further yabba-dabba-doo...
Hey, look, Fred's washing his car with the shower. Now back to the Flintstones.
All right, let's go ahead. We'll get into issue one. Introduce the characters. I'm following my notes here, finally. Issue one. We get the intro, pretty much the introduction to the life of Fred, Barney, Wilma, and Betty. Okay. Just like I said, these guys are friends. I think neighbors also. Fred and Barney work at the Slate Quarry, I think. I don't know if Barney works there or not. I assume he does, but I know we definitely know Fred does. He goes there for his daily job. Slate's Quarry, moving rocks. Now in this issue, Fred has to show
from one place to the other.
just doing the job. Fred has to show 3 new Neanderthals. Now, make sure Neanderthals is the correct term. Cro-Magnons are not. We'll make sure we get that right. 3 new Neanderthals around. His boss, Slate, says, hey, take these guys out on the town, convince them to stay in Bedrock, because the Neanderthals, even though they aren't so smart, they are definitely strong and they could do a good job. So I want these guys to come into town, stay here. They get a job at the quarry, and hey, life is good because now I have 3 muscle-bound Neanderthals who can do a good job and get paid what I pay them. So that's Fred's job for issue 1. Wilma in this issue gets some paintings that she had done, accepted at a museum. Really, the big plot line there is as she takes them to the museum and they get heavily criticized because her paintings are hand paintings. And there's a little bit of a message there that they get across about how much art means to her. The art that she does means to her, but as everybody else looks at it, they pretty much crap upon it. So there's that. The Neanderthals and Fred and Wilma actually go to Slate's house for a hot tub party where one of their friends... It's funny because Slate just keeps trying to talk these guys into doing stuff at this party, these Neanderthals. Like, hey, why don't you go over there and eat this spider? I'll give you this money. So he has no respect for these people at all. No respect for the Neanderthals. Even though they talk, it's not like they're beyond communicating. They talk like everybody else. They're just a little bit separate from, you know, the hominids of the humans here in Bedrock. And finally, he convinces one of them to go out and kill this mammoth, and the Neanderthal gets the bad end of that deal and gets crushed. So the Neanderthals, the 2 remaining Neanderthals, get up, after the party, look at Fred and are like, "We're out of here. We're done. We're leaving." And Fred's like, "Why? Why are you? What's going on?" And Slate's doing the same thing. "What are you talking about? I've got you here. Got you a job. I mean, it's got to be better than the life you were in." The Neanderthals say, Civilization is not for them, as it seems as though the point is always to get someone else to do the killing for you. And they head back out into the wilderness, leaving Bedrock behind. And that's pretty much where we leave issue one. Now, far cry from the superhero comics that we've talked about before. These are almost like everyday human issues set back in the prehistoric age with Fred and Barney. However, there are some life, help me out here, Ronnie. Wow.
Lessons.
Thank you. I think there's some life lessons involved in this story. Okay, I have this first issue and this first discussion point. So, Ronnie, I'm going to bring this up to you, buddy.
Okay.
All right. Get your size ready. And I'm not talking. Oh, man. I was about to make a Raphael joke. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and a size. anyway. All right. So what do you think of the statement that they're making in at the end of that book about how civilization. Yeah, it's going to be issue one, folks. Civilization seems to be the only point of civilization is to get someone else to do your killing. And I took that as a job for you.
That's a very dark outlook on life, on civilization as a whole. You talk about this being a far cry from the superhero comic books that we read. This is a far cry from the original Flintstones. The only thing that they really have going for them between the original cartoon and this is the character names, the time period, and that's about it.
I hear you.
I just think it's a really dark outlook on civilization as a whole. It's a kind of a negative look on humanity as a whole as well. To me, it was kind of a look on how we view government and people and everybody today is like the only reason or corporation or whatever, the only way to get it that people are getting ahead is to step on the little guy, which is not true in all cases by any means necessary, in my opinion. Some people may disagree with me on that, but I've seen it. I've worked for large corporations, and while that may be true in some instances, it's not in others. So I just think that's a really, really bleak outlook on the whole situation as a on everything as a whole.
Now, he specifically says civilization, so he's not really saying life itself. But I was hard pressed to sit here and think of a job or something where that just didn't apply, because it always seems like, hey, you are doing the man's bidding, no matter what. I can't think of any other job where you're not doing something else for somebody else.
I mean, I thought it was very realistic
to a certain point. And now, like I said, it would be very naive of me to say that doesn't exist now. It'd be very naive, and I'd be very wrong. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think everybody's like that.
The whole comic book is supposed to be a satire in life, and there are absolutely people who will do that. I think more than you think. I don't think it's an indictment of the corporation culture at large, but again, I think there's time to sort of partition out, like, well, some people are okay, but other people are, no, he slates a character that's used to represent the shitty boss, the shitty rich person who, I mean, why was the $1 million man in the WWE so popular? Because it was a character that everyone could identify with. They didn't parcel out like, well, there's this and that. They made one guy who paid a small black child to bounce a basketball, and then he kicked the basketball out of his hand. Okay. That's why I'm bringing that up. It's the same sort of thing, and it's obviously resonant enough and a popular enough notion that it keeps coming back up in different aspects of the culture. That was how many years ago? On an episode of Superstars.
Yeah.
In the WWF, and we're still talking about the same exact type of thing in a comic book written in 2016.
Well, that was my one discussion point, really. It sounded like more like I get the impressions you guys were seeing, how Slate looked like the overbearing businessman, and they just do this and I'll give you money. But then you get to thinking about the whole of civilization itself. As soon as you take on, of course, we're all trying to do something just to better ourselves, but it seems like you're always doing that one thing to better somebody else above you as well. society as a whole or civilization as a whole. It's just one of the things that he said in his interviews, what Mark Russell said in his interviews, was that he wanted to take the opportunity with this book to show you everything that is wrong with civilization, or at least his views of what is wrong with civilization. And I kind of see that. I can see where he's coming from. I mean, these Neanderthals out in the middle of nowhere, they're hanging out, they're having a good time just living their life. And then somebody comes along and says, hey, why don't you come on up here? We've got a better life for you. You know, you can move rocks for us. We'll pay you money. You can go get food, blah, blah, blah. Do all this stuff. Move yourself right into this system. And then all of a sudden, after, I don't know, 1 or 2 days that they were hanging out with Fred and Mr. Slate, they're like, no, screw this. We're heading back to the trees. We're done. Because there's no point in it. If you're wanting us to continue to do stuff for you, I was perfectly fine doing what I was doing for myself. Neat message. Ronnie, is this, were you not impressed with this first issue?
No, no.
Okay.
I guess I'm kind of taking it to heart because I did watch it as a kid, and this is not what the Flintstones
to me. It's weird. Yeah, you're right, man. It's weird to see a property. And I think that's what takes me. I think that what makes this very interesting for me is that they've taken a property that I was so used to as a kid and have put a spin on it. Now, I want to say that that's unique, but really it's not, because we see it all the time in movies now. We see it in a lot of different media, but the Flintstones just seem so innocent. Would you agree, Ronnie?
Absolutely. And to me, like, okay, no matter what you do, no matter where you are, your beliefs and your, you can even say politics are going to come out no matter what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And some sort of art, some sort of outlet, who you are is going to come out. Who we are comes out in our shows and our podcasts.
Yep.
But this is, to me, it was a little too preachy. You know what I mean? It just kind of started off with me. It's like, I'm right, you're wrong. My way of life, my way of thinking is better than what anybody else has for you.
Yeah,
I guess. And it could be that I disagree with him on 90% of what he's saying through these books, but it hit me hard because I'm like, no, this is not the Flintstones. This is not what they represent. This is not who they are. They're fun. They're a loving family, and I don't know. Never mind. I'll show.
Well, no, we're gonna again save some of that stuff there because we'll definitely come back to that towards the end there.
Right, we do know that this was a parody of the Honeymooners, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely think you're looking back on them with rose-colored glasses. I think you have a childhood attachment to the Flintstones that you have it in this very, very specific light, and you associate very, very positive memories to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look back on it objectively, one, it was, again, it was a takeoff of the Honeymooners, which was about an obnoxious fat guy who kept threatening to beat his wife.
He did keep threatening to beat his wife.
But did you ever hear Fred threaten to beat Wilma?
It was a children's show.
Yeah, but it was also the 60s. They were advertising cigarettes on, you know, with him. They'd be like, oh, hey, I'm Fred Flintstone. I like to light up with
There was no way they were going to encourage kids to be like, all right, and, you know, this isn't George Lucas's Star Wars. You just can't go around decking women. So
the original script.
Yes. Go listen to our podcast, our 12-episode podcast. But if you'll remember going back, you know, yeah, Wilma got plenty of play too in that show. I mean, she definitely gave Fred the business, you know, and it was always, it was very much the template for what would eventually become like the know-nothing dad.
Right.
You know, he throws his weight around, but really it's the woman who sort of runs the show. But I still say that I still think that there was a lot of social commentary in that show. Yes, there were a lot of sight gags. Yes, there were a lot of one-liners and everything else. It couldn't get too preachy, but I would tell you even back then it was a bite on the contemporary times of that age.
Right.
And it just may be that we were kids and didn't pick up on it because we were not, you know, we were not the children of the men of the 20s. We were children of the men of the 70s. We, you know, and so we're looking at a cartoon that was written for a contemporary audience And much like, you know, kids watching stuff now that we, you know, that we watched as kids, it's like, okay, well, we get the sight gags, you know, it's like watching the Minions movie. Like the kids like it for the fun, you know, banana and the colorful images and, you know, little tablet sized people punching each other in the face. But Robert Winfrey and I watched that movie too, and we got some of the admittedly stupid commentary that the movie was giving about life, the universe, and everything. So, like I said, I think the idea that, you know, oh, the Flintstones shouldn't have this biting satire sort of misses the point of what the Flintstones originally was anyway.
Pow, bang, zoom to the moon.
I see that.
One of these days. I've watched a few Honeymooners in my day too. That was
Always get up over him anyway too.
Oh, she did.
Yeah.
It seemed like the whole show was him just walking home drunk with his pants half off. Like, Alice, come here so I can punch you in the chin. Here's my friend, so George wrong. Lucas. And then, you know, and she was just like, oh, I have the meatloaf. No, it wasn't like that at all. One of these days, Alan, she'd get right up in his grill. She'd pull a Glock out and be like, one of these days, what, you fat motherfucker? And he'd be like, hey, I'm just driving a bus around here. That's how I remember the Honeymooners.
Oh, wonderful.
Your version of the Honeymooners was vastly different than mine.
I watched an unedited cut.
Oh, okay.
Special edition.
Where Alice had a clock.
Yeah.
Right,
and,
go on.
And dropped the F-bomb quite frequently.
All right. Well, let's. Okay. So that's our deep first issue. Deep. We dissected that one. So let's go in. We'll get into issue two, which I have affectionately titled the crap issue, because this issue is about is, I think, really, it's about materialism. And there's a good bit of theology in here as well, or a discussion about religion. First off, Fred takes the family to the First Church of Animism, which I never did look up that word. So if anybody knows what that word is or wants to look it up as I'm talking, please feel free to do so. But the First Church of Animism, which later on in the comic book becomes the Reformed First Church of Animism. So we get a glimpse of how Fred and Wilma and Pebbles go and worship their god, which I think was Morp at the beginning of this issue. And it tends to go through quite a few changes as we go through the issue as well. Now,
whenever you're ready, by the way,
go ahead. Tell me, please. Animism:
the belief that natural objects, natural phenomena, and the universe itself possess souls.
Okay, now, I can't remember what Morp was. Was Morp the? I know that Ronnie exasperately sighs. Anyway, I think at one point Morp was they. I can't remember what it was, but I know that they played this record, and then everybody was like, "What the hell are you talking about? This Morp is a god." And well, then the next Sunday, they've erased Morp from existence. And they said, "Hey, we've got a new god here. It's this Peaches," and it turns out to be a pink elephant. And of course, everybody is now worshiping the elephant. Now, as the side story goes, it has become evident as Barney gets a brand new TV, the first one in existence, that the town of Bedrock has been taken over by a plague, but it's more like this unsatiable urge to get more stuff. The news is even reporting it that, hey, and they call it specifically in this book, crap. It is called crap. People can't get enough crap. So everybody's running around and just buying stuff, including Fred and Wilma. Wilma has Fred go and buy a dishwasher, which is, of course, you know, we get the talking animals / appliances in these books, just like we did in the cartoon. We get the octopus dishwasher. We get one of my favorite characters, Power Goat.
Power Goat, motherfucker.
Power Goat, which apparently is a weed eater that Fred picks up and all he says is Power Goat.
That's not all he says.
Well, he does. At one point, he does say Power Goat bitch, right? Or biznitch or something. Something like that.
Yeah, I'm walking around just yelling out Power Goat from now on.
Power Goat. Hey, we starts it up. Power Goat.
Hey, you have a performance review coming up. What are some of the things you think you do well here? Power Goat, motherfucker.
Power Goat.
Give this man a raise.
So now, in order to keep up with the crap costs stuff. Okay, it costs money to keep up with the crap. So in order to do this, Fred and Barney have to figure out a way to supplement their income. And what they find out is there's this guy who is he's generous enough to offer him a mistake as to become vitamin salesman. Fred and Barney become vitamin salesman, which, as I said, we would get back to this. It hit me tonight. I did not catch this, but they clearly it was a nod to the Flintstones vitamins, which Fred specifically says after trying to shill all this stuff, trying to sell all these vitamins. Fred can't get a leg up. He sells one bottle and he's ecstatic, and he's trying to figure out. He's like, man, Marty must be having a hard time trying to sell this stuff. And he runs over and he finds out Barney has actually got people surrounding him trying to buy stuff off of him because he's told everybody that he's given Bam Bam these vitamins. And if anybody remembers what Bam Bam can do, Bam Bam is he's just unordinarily strong.
Yeah, crazy strong.
Crazy strong. He can pick things up with one hand, and that was a staple in the cartoons. So he's sitting there. I think Bam Bam has like a car above his head or something. And all these people are flocking, thinking that Barney has given the vitamins to this kid, and they all want some.
He ain't Fred, no power goat.
when Fred goes and gets his pay for his one bottle he sold after he tried and tried and tried and devoted all these hours, you know, almost getting mauled by a T-Rex, and the guy gives him, you know, the one pay for one bottle of vitamins that he sold, he goes off, to which he runs out, throws the vitamins, and then looks at this kid and says, "Vitamins are a scam." Let that sink in. In the interview that I watched where Mark Russell was talking about these books, he said that he can't believe that got past DC editorial. When he put that in there, he's like, surely this is something that they're going to throw back in my face, because clearly the Flintstones have built this brand up. But obviously, you know, he was counting on people like me who didn't get it until reading it three times. So, hey.
Power go, baby.
You were distracted by Power Goat.
Yes, I was distracted. There you go. I was distracted by Power Goat.
We get it.
Now, in the midst of finding all their crap, the family realizes that Peaches, the god at their church, they happen upon this store that has like six peaches sitting in a stall, and it turns out the elephants are vacuum cleaners. So they are worshiping a vacuum cleaner at their church. You know, these preachers or priests are just, they're confounded. They don't know what to do. They keep coming up with stuff, and then the next thing you know, well, that's on the market and people are buying it. So they can't find something that's actually going to fit to be a god without it actually being a specific thing. Until finally, some guy just takes a blank piece of paper. One of the priests takes a blank piece of paper and holds it up. He goes, "I'm thinking about this." And the other priest looks at him and says, "There's nothing there." And he looks at him and he says, "Exactly." Now that's hitting some stuff. You can tell there's a message there that the guy's trying to get across. I know you can. Yeah. Sigh number five. Oh, yes. Our message about crap. I forgot about Wilma's great heartwarming message about crap, because they're just overwhelmed with all the stuff they kept buying. And Wilma finally comes out and says, "Look, all the stuff that has ever made me happy is just it pretty much boils down to me being next to someone or something that loves me back. And all this crap can't do that for you." At that time, Fred is like, "You're right." And he gathers all this stuff up and he's taking it back to the store. And of course, the store's kind of giving him a hard time. "Hey, you've used this a little too much." And so he gets in-store credit. He has no idea what he's going to get until he looks down and he realizes that there is this purple dinosaur down there on the floor. And he asks the storekeeper, "What does that do?" And the storekeeper looks up at him and says, "Well, he does nothing." And Fred's like, "I'll take it." So there, it turns out to be the introduction, first appearance of Dino, our lovable mutt that always jumps on a lovable mutt dinosaur that always jumped on Fred as he came home. That was always in the intro, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, there you go. There's our issue two, Crap Power Goat.
I love this issue. I think it's great. It's not nearly as good as the next one. The next one's phenomenal.
Okay.
It's my favorite one of the four, to be perfectly honest with you. But there's a couple of things. I don't know if it was introduced in this episode, in this issue, or the next one. But a couple of things I definitely wanted to bring up. One thing that you didn't talk about yet, and again, because it might not have come up yet, but was the Royal Order of Water Buffalo.
Oh, yes.
In this case, is that they're actually veterans of a war. and it's like, and it's serious stuff, and it's like they like a lot of them like PTSD. I think one of them actually like kills himself. It's very dark, but it's interesting, and I like the fact that he took a lot of like the very innocent gags or staples of the Flintstones and gave them depth and meaning. So, you know, the idea of going to your club, you know, as a man of the 60s, and he sort of turns that on its head, and it's now they're veterans of this horrible war that they fought, and it's a war that gave them civilization, but at the cost of their humanity. I'm like, that's fucking great. Mm-hmm. And if you're somebody who deals with veterans a lot through the course of my professional career, they would, I think, tell you that, you know, a lot of the, you know, the quote unquote freedom that we have in this country comes at the cost, and it comes at the cost of a lot of people's humanity. You know, they have to become soldiers. Soldiers have to become killing machines. They have to, you know, go to these horrible places, you know, these deserts and these, you know, places that look like the Slate Rock Quarry, places like Afghanistan. And they have to face these horrible, horrible situations, put their lives on the line. But it's so that we back here in this country can continue to live the lives that we do.
And buy our crap.
Yeah. Which brings me to the second thing. But I really wanted to make sure that we talked about that as much as it's very dark, maybe not in line with the original concept of the Flintstones, I thought it was great. I thought it was a great use of what was a relatively stupid thing in the cartoon, you know, the Royal Order of Water Buffalo.
Yeah.
But the idea of a consumer driven culture, I mean, do we have to talk long about that? Is that not evident?
It's keeping up with the Joneses.
We just got through the Christmas season.
Yeah.
You know, and how much of the Christmas season, Jesse, and you went on a fucking crazy rant on the Christmas show.
To be followed up by the 12 months of I don't give a fuck by you.
Yes. I'm not going to say that I didn't try to top it. But but let's be serious. You went on this whole rant about, like, you know, buying presents for the kids and everything. And I feel like what you were really trying to say is, was it really necessary to buy each kid like 100 presents? No. One present would have done it. One present was all they needed.
Yep.
But we do it. And why do we do it? You know, I feel a need to compensate for something. I don't know why. You know, I told you the whole thing about buying Jonas the 12-inch DC figures and the math that I had to go through, and none of it mattered. You know,
yeah.
But I felt it was important. Christmas is over and the packages are still coming into this house. We just bought a salt lamp. I'm not going to say it was a bad idea. I'm just saying we did. We don't need it, but we got it.
Well, you can always play Indiana Jones with it.
My wife just got a dock for her Apple Watch. Didn't need it. Got it anyway. I'm staring at a pile of graphic novels I have not even begun to start reading yet. Mm-hmm. And I just bought a Carrie Fisher book. After our podcast that we did, that I've only read two chapters of. I don't have enough time to finish reading the books I've already got on my shelf, but I went and bought more books. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm putting down. So, I mean, what is this not about if not the exact culture we're living in and we're a part of and contribute to? So I really thought it was brilliant.
I sit down here in this basement and I work and I look around at all the stuff that isn't worthy of being upstairs. And how long it's sat down here. I look at a box and I'm like, that hasn't been opened up for 3 years. Why the hell do I have it? Why do I continue? Because I bought something new over the, dude, I kid you not, for the kids. Now, a lot of this is hand-me-down stuff, so I can't say that I went out and bought it. But because we have kids and Colton is growing up, we have a lot of clothes that somebody has given to us, to where I've got two or three bins worth of clothes that this kid hasn't even grown into yet. But I continue to just store them down here. I know for a fact, probably at some point, there's going to be where I go upstairs and I realize that this kid's too big for the clothes that I've kept downstairs for the past 3 or 4 years. We never brought them out. It's just crap that we have some kind of weird attachment to. Is there something on that you could say? For me, it's comics. Personally, it's comics. Okay, I know that I could tell you I can go upstairs and out of the 12 long boxes of comics that I have, I may have read 4. That's bad. That's some bad crap. That's something that I bought at an auction or something just because I wanted to have it. You got a vice, Ronnie, that you buy that you got to have, Pop vinyl figures. I knew that was coming. The pops.
Pop vinyl figures. Okay, and it started with me because a friend of mine, he has got so many of these things, and I was like, I'll never buy one of those. And I bought a couple of them, and my sister has them. Let me put it this way. I bought them and I started collecting them and I started thinking about it. I was like, man, I really want this. You know, a new movie came out. So that means there's new pops that came out. You know, Funko was putting out, you know, pops. I mean, shoot, there's 18 pops and I've got two of them and I need the other two. I need, quote unquote, need the other two.
That's my 3 year old's favorite saying, by the way, is I need it.
Right. You're 3 year old.
That wasn't a shot at you, by the way.
No. And I totally get it. So I, like I said, this goes back to the 10% I may agree with. We are too caught up in crap. We're too caught up as a society, as a person. I'm just going to lay this on me. I'm too caught up in keeping up with the Joneses. I don't need an Apple Watch because this guy, I saw another guy I know with one on his wrist. Mm-hmm. I don't need this. I don't need the latest iPhone. I don't need this, but I do it anyway because this other person has it, or, you know, it's cool and I want it. So I get it. And a lot of times it's to fill a void that we have in our lives. I really truly believe that. That's where my beliefs come in. We surround ourselves with this stuff thinking it'll make us feel better. And it does nothing but break our bank accounts, make us envious of our neighbor and what that person has. And
just like Wilma said, it can't love you back.
It can't love you back. Yeah, we can have our vices. I'm not saying that, you know, you don't have your collections or whatever, you know, the things you enjoy, you know, comic books or pop vinyl figures or what, you know, or graphic novels or whatever. But when it comes to a point of where I look at something and I need it because somebody else has it or it's the newest thing, then I have to sit down. I have to do a gut check. And I'm like, I don't need this at all. You know, this is something that me as a person, for lack of a better term, my flesh wants more than I really, you know, I don't need that crap.
Let me say two things. Number one, I don't have as much of a sentimental attachment to stuff anymore because I've moved and I've lost so much stuff over the course of moves and a divorce and just, you know, I've lost cars, I've lost CDs, I've lost comics, I've lost toys. I have definitely, especially in my youth, collected a lot of stuff. Star Wars figures, like I said, comic books, but I've had to sell or I've lost so much of this stuff that I've now turned the other way where I don't really want to own anything. The only reason why I'm even buying the physical graphic novels is because it literally hurt my eyes to read them on the Kindle.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, okay, and I want to read these stories. I want to dictate Jesse's schedule for him. So,
I'm glad it costs you money to do that.
And all that stuff. And I don't want to, I'm not taking a shot at anybody when I say that, or when I say the stuff that I'm saying at all. It goes towards myself more than anything. You know, for me, I agree with him that I am too caught up in what I can get and what I quote unquote need, just because the other person has it.
I recently sold a bunch of my Wii stuff and some podcasting equipment. I pawned it, not because I really needed to, but I was just like, I'm not using this stuff. I need to get it out of the house. Like, And that's what I was getting to. Like, I'm now gone so far the other way that before, like a month before Christmas, I made my son go through his toys and like get rid of the ones he's not going to play with anymore to make room for the new stuff I knew was coming in. My daughter, I tried to make do that, but I wasn't really home. So my wife kind of did it and I got like a small bucket full of little toys. I'm like, really? Wait, what the fuck is this? Like, I'm expecting her to like clean out half her room. And she's like, my wife's like, you're a maniac. Calm down.
You sound like me, my friend. Trust me.
Just like, knock it the fuck off. But I really did. Like, and I'm always going through like my son's clothing and I'm like, well, and it was so funny because like he had a shirt and the shirt, when he lifted up his arms, came like above his waist, just like a little above his belly. And I'm like, that shirt's too small. It's got to go.
Yes. That's what I do, man.
And my wife's like, it still fits.
No.
And I'm just like, no. What is it, Brad Pitt from Fight Club? Fuck off. He's not wearing it anymore. You know, but that's not to say that I didn't go right out and buy him two more shirts when we went to SeaWorld. You know, so it's, and granted, he's got to wear clothing. I'm not saying, I'm like, oh, I will dress my child in rags. But no, right. But he also didn't need the shirt from SeaWorld either. So, but like I look at like, you know, like I'm still recovering from pneumonia. And so there's only so much physically that I can do. I look around my living room and I'm such a psycho now about it. Like, what else can I get rid of? You know, I literally look around the house looking for things to take out of this house.
You know what?
You know, to sell or pawn or throw in the street in madness.
Early plug for your concept show you got coming up here pretty soon about the whole make me because someone made me. There is a documentary. I don't know if you've seen it yet or not, but maybe this is something I might make you do. Because I haven't watched it yet, though, but I'm really interested. Have you seen the advertisement on Netflix for Minimalism or Minimalist? I think
Saw that there was it. I saw that it existed. I don't know.
Oh boy, that could change our lives, Mark Radulich.
Oh no,
I'm a very sentimental person. That's why I have my I decorated my Christmas tree with Star Wars toys. You know, I kept a hold of them because they're sentimental to me. They're you know, I'll keep these pop vinyl figures forever.
Wait. Were they precious to you?
Precious.
I'm not Smeagol. But you know, I get it. But there are certain things in my life that I don't need. I stopped. I personally really cut down on comic book reading. You know, buying new comic. I haven't bought a new comic book in a long time because you know it was taking up a lot of my money. You know, it was taking up. You know, and I don't need that. You know, half the time I was like, that's it. I don't even enjoy this. What am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, some of these books are just not enjoyable to me anymore. So I wait and I buy a bunch of them when they're on sale or whatever, if I'm following the storyline or if I enjoy the storyline. So I get what he's saying in that. But
so my wife was a hoarder when I met her.
Is she a hoarder like by clinical terms or by Radulich's terms?
Radulich.
Okay.
She just held on to a lot of.
A couple of boxes.
Well, no, let's not get silly. She just had a lot of stuff that she had held on to. I mean, you know, she'd gone to college. She had moved back in with her parents. She had brought a lot of stuff back. So when I met her, her room was just full of stuff, and she forced herself into my apartment. And she only brought a little bit of stuff with her originally. And when the full move happened, you know, we had to go get all the stuff out of her room. Now I'm in a one bedroom apartment, right? And I have a very, you want to talk about minimalist. This is like post divorce. Okay. So I've now left my first wife, which is a whole other horror story, but, I've now left my first wife. Because I left in sort of a rush, we'll call it that, a rush. I didn't have like furniture or anything. So I'd like rebuy some stuff from Walmart to put my crap on. Speaking of crap, to take us back to the Flintstones. And then there were certain things that were donated to me by people, by friends of my parents who were like, oh, we're getting rid of some furniture. I hear your son's a loser and just left his wife. So would you like some used furniture? Like, yes, I would. But my apartment was very bare, but at the time it's what I needed. I needed like a fresh start. I needed a reset on my whole life at that point. I liked having almost nothing in my apartment. Like my bedroom literally had a bed and my clothes in it.
Oh,
that's
wow.
It. My, you know, living room was like a TV, bookshelf, CD shelf, which had 1,000 CDs on it. Cause you know, psycho, if I haven't said it yet, my television. But then my wife moves, my you know, girlfriend at the time moves in. Shortly thereafter, and it's like, we got to go get my stuff. And I'm looking, and there's a part of me that's like, it doesn't really want to give up, quote unquote, that minimalist lifestyle that I had been living, because I felt it was like a cleansing. My apartment had very little stuff in it, and it was like, yeah, that's what my soul needs right now, is to not be laden with garbage.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, like, I also was like, I don't want all of your stuff in my apartment. And she's like, what, are you not committed to me? And I'm like, it's nothing to do with you. I didn't realize you were a package deal with all your crap. It was more of, it's more of, I have a small apartment. I can't afford to take 27 years of nonsense and shove it into my two bedroom, you know, into my two rooms I currently pay rent on. You know, and I remember like I was trying to be funny about it, you know, like I am, but... But at the same time, I was also kind of mean, and I kept also using my dog as an excuse for why she couldn't bring all of her stuffed animals. And that was the thing. Like, I don't know if Jesse went through this with his girlfriend, but like, if you date a girl with like an enormous stuffed animal collection, apparently this is big time stuff here, and they can't go anywhere without it. And I and she tried to sell me on that argument. And I was like, my dog's going to tear apart all your stuffed animals. I just want you to know that. if you truly treasure this stuff, you will leave it in your mother's house.
For the rest of your life.
And for the rest of your life, yeah. And I just and the moral of the story, ladies and gentlemen, is she married me anyway, so fuck you.
Jeez.
Anyway, the whole point of that to bring back to the Flintstones is, we get very caught up, and we meet others who are very caught up in just piling your life with stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know. And there's very and there's other ways to find meaning in life without acquiring possessions.
It's the truth. So it's a good message. Good message. And that is where we will put a bow on part two of our three-part Flintstones coverage. Our final part to this episode is planned to air Monday, January 16th, 2017. So until then, everybody, have a good one!